The reading is taken from Mark chapter 1, verses 29 to 39. As soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they told Jesus about her. So he went to her, took her hand, and helped her up. The fever left her, and she began to wait on them. That evening, after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." Jesus replied, "Let us go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so that I can preach there also. That is why I have come," so that he travelled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons.
The book of Isaiah has by many commentators been regarded as one that is split into three sections. Chapters 1 to 39, 40 to 55, and 56 to 66, with a different author for each. The first section, up to chapter 39, was written roughly in the 8th century BC, and it covers the time when the Israelites were in their homeland and Jerusalem was the capital. The second section, written some 2 centuries later, covered a time when the Israelites were in captivity and in Babylon. And presumably, the author of that second section was in Babylon too. And for what we know, his name also could have been Isaiah. And the third section was set in post-exile, in a post-exile period when they were back home in their homeland. And the first section, written in about 740 BC, follows a vision given to Isaiah by a holy, moral God and denounces the wrongs and the injustices of the time. His prophecies are directed primarily at the rich for their oppression of the poor, or their perversion of justice, for their luxurious lifestyles, which included a great deal of drunkenness. He attacks the way that religion had become a ritual and calls for repentance and true religion of heart, of the heart. At that time, Assyria was the dominant world force, and the threat of being overthrown by Assyria was only avoided by a disease which struck the Syrian army while it was besieging Jerusalem in 701 BC. And because of that disease striking the soldiers, they returned to Assyria without taking Jerusalem. The second book of Isaiah starts with a totally different setting. Jerusalem is no more. It's been destroyed. The Assyrian Empire has vanished and overtaken by the Babylonians. And from about 587 BC, I'm going to test you on these dates later on, the Israelites are in captivity. The tone of the text is very different from that of the previous chapters. Chapter 40, which Jim read so well for us, is one of the greatest in the whole of the Bible, not just the Old Testament. "Comfort, comfort, my people," says your God. "Speak tenderly," to Jerusalem. God acknowledges the suffering of his people and wants to encourage them and give them hope. He reminds them in this chapter of his greatness and that nothing can compare with his might and majesty. Even the idols that have been built have been made of wood and gold and have had to be made so that they would not rot or topple over. Can you think of an idol? You know, worshipping something that's just going to topple over. And so we come to our reading this morning. The sheer majesty of the words leave us breathless. He sits enthroned above the earth, stretches out the heavens like a canopy, brings princes to naught, and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. This is a word of hope and encouragement to God's people who have been worn down by the brutality of their captors. You'll recall that Psalm 137 says, "By the rivers of Babylon we sat and we wept when we remembered Zion." Their tormentors demanded songs from their homeland that they could, but they couldn't bring themselves to sing the songs because they were songs of joy. They were at a very low ebb. And verse 27 of that reading is key. "Why do you say, O Jacob, and complain, O Israel, my way is hidden from you, my cause is disregarded by my God?" In their despair, they couldn't find their God. They had lost touch with him and felt that he didn't care. Have you ever felt like that? Had what is called a desert experience when you can't find God in difficult situations? The doubts creep in. Is there a God? Is he all that he's cracked up to be? Why can't I find him? Why doesn't he help me? Some people believe that if they live a good life and are faithful, then God will not allow tragedy to strike them. How often do we hear people say, or even say it ourselves, when someone who we think doesn't deserve to suffer, "Why did God let it happen? He doesn't smoke, he doesn't drink, he isn't overweight, keeps himself fit, does a good day's work, and serves in the church faithfully." Do we say that? Sometimes. Because God doesn't micromanage our lives and allows us freedom, then it does mean that all of us are vulnerable to tragedy. Cancer doesn't pick on the deserving victim. Good people lose their jobs. Accidents do happen. The mighty and the powerful also share in times of tragedy and despair. Abraham Lincoln was a man of deep faith. On his desk in the White House, he kept three books. One was the United States Statutes. The second was the works of Shakespeare, and the third was the Bible. But Lincoln suffered from bouts of deep depression. With so much to do and the nation on the brink of civil war, he was tempted to run away from it all. He once wrote, "I've been driven to my knees many times because I had nowhere else to turn." And yet, it was in those times of prayer that he found the strength and determination to move forward and meet the challenges. Isaiah doesn't promise that God will protect them from tragedy, but he does say that in God they can discover the strength to endure it. Let me read verses 29 to 31 again from that passage. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Wonderful words of encouragement. These majestic claims of God's power and strength are seen in a different way as we have read the passage about Jesus in our second reading. The power and strength of Jesus is seen in a very personal way. Jesus had just come from the synagogue where people were amazed at his teaching, but during which a man possessed by an evil spirit shouted out at Jesus, disrupting the proceedings. Jesus at once replied, and the spirit left him with a streak. The people were amazed that he showed an authority they hadn't encountered before, and news about him spread over the whole region of Galilee. Jesus then went with his disciples to the house of Simon and Andrew. According to Jewish custom, the Sabbath meal came immediately after the synagogue service. That's the sixth hour, which is about 12 noon. And Jesus just might have wanted to have a quiet time of rest and relaxation after the exhausting experience of teaching and healing in the service. But they found Simon's mother-in-law to be ill with a fever. Once again, we see the simple method of Jesus used in healing. He went to her, took her hand, and helped her up. No fuss, no magic words, just an authoritative power, and the healing process was completed. Now, this little story tells us much about Jesus and those around him. With Jesus, nothing was too much trouble for him. No matter how tired or stressed he was, he always had time for people and found the strength he needed. Where did that strength come from? His is an example we should all be prepared to follow. That phone call for help at an inconvenient time, that request for a visit, that car drive to a hospital appointment. I'm going to break here and just tell you a little story that happened this week. On Tuesday, I was preparing in the study of preparing this talk, and I got to this point where I said that his was an example we should follow, that phone call at an inconvenient time. And it was tea time. So I left it there and went downstairs, and we had our dinner, and just after we'd finished our dinner, the phone rang. And it was Martin asking if I could pop round to the church to cover him while he went for a presentation. I hadn't had my banana or yogurt yet. And he said, but if you, this was about 6:45 in the evening, he said, if you could come by 7, that would be very helpful. So I scoffed down my banana and yogurt and got there about 2 minutes after 7. But And I told him this story in Jane, and it's just, isn't it funny? Well, I think God has got a great sense of humour, don't you? I was going to say a wicked sense. You can't say a wicked sense of humour. But just at that moment in time, that should happen. And it was tremendous, really, that it proved the point of what I was trying to say. But in these actions, we serve not only others, but we serve also Jesus. So I ask the question again, where does our strength come from? We see also the disciples coming to Jesus for help. They hadn't known him for very long at this stage, and yet they began to take their troubles and their needs to him. They learned from a very early stage on what they then became a habit of a lifetime, to take their troubles to Jesus and ask him for help. And this story also tells us something about Peter's mother-in-law. No sooner had she been healed than she began to wait on them and attend to their needs. I think it's a lovely little touch to this story. We don't know her name or anything else about her, but we do know what is important. She used her gifts in the service of Jesus. It was early evening, after sunset, that the people of the town came to Jesus and brought with them those who were sick and demon-possessed. Remember that this was the Sabbath day, and no work could be done on that day. So carrying someone to Jesus would have constituted work. And so they had to wait until the evening, until after 6 p.m., which was when the Sabbath day ended. And of course, they didn't have clocks or watches at that time. So the law stated that the day ended when three stars came out in the sky. So in his compassion, Jesus healed many people and cast out many demons. He must have been exhausted by the end of the day. But again, where did his strength come from? We've asked that question three times now and can go no further without seeking an answer. And that lies in the remaining part of our reading from Mark. Jesus was left with no time of his own, time which was absolutely necessary for him to spend with his Father. He couldn't keep giving out without also taking in. And so he needed quiet, private time with God that could be spent in prayer. And so he rose very early in the morning, while it was still dark, and went to a solitary place where he prayed. Several times in the Gospel, we read of Jesus doing the same thing. So if it was necessary for Jesus, then how much more must it be necessary for us? Prayer will never do our work for us, but it will strengthen us in our service to him. The God who gave Jesus the power to do his will in his everyday ministry, to preach the good news and to heal the sick, who gave courage to the Israelites to cope in exile, is there for us whenever we call upon him.